Well, I apologize for going on so long earlier. I belong to a 12-step group for talkers. It's called On and On and On. And most important here is not anything that I could say to you anyway, but really the presence of Jesus and his love for you. So like to make sure to take some time in prayer, and also we're going to have a little litany of the saints to remember in their great multitude also how present they are to us, how present they are every time we are in the chapel, especially in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, so present to us, a great multitude of saints and angels, each of us with our guardian angels. It's a wonderful thing to do sometimes when you're at Mass, or sometimes when you're in class, or sometimes when you're about to wring someone's neck, to call to mind the fact that their guardian angel is there, and so is yours. What are your guardian angels doing at that very moment in time? And of course, the communion of saints, and pick out a few of your favorite ones, sitting next to you in the pew, singing with you. Probably they sing better in heaven than they did in real life. Beautiful. There's so much going on. We fall into the dangers since the French Enlightenment, especially of materialist positivism, that we imagine the only things that are true are the things that we can positively assert, prove their existence, or that we can sort of detect with our senses. But of course, it cuts out this whole realm of the supernatural, which is in some ways more real and alive than you and I are. And to just make that act of faith, it is something we can only encounter in faith, but each of us in our baptism has the virtue of theological faith, and we can make that act of faith to realize the angels are very much with us. The saints are very much with us, and especially in our prayer. It's wonderful to get outside of ourselves for a moment and see how are they loving him. Even now, how are they rejoicing? How are they singing? How delighted is your guardian angel that you are here at this moment? Just absolutely delighted. Because your guardian angel is probably protecting you from a fair amount otherwise, but it gets a little bit easier. Your guardian angel can relax a little bit more being in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. The demons tend to be a little farther away, so the angels don't have to work quite as hard. We have meditated on entering into an encounter with Jesus, encountering him especially face to face, the eyes of love that he has for us, drawing into an encounter. I hope that you've had a little bit of time. I've been moved, so moved, the few of you that I've been able to talk to one-on-one and confession, so moved by those encounters. I hope you've also had a chance for some encounter with the Lord in silence and throughout the day. We meditated on the somewhat unexpected ways that Jesus encounters us, the unexpected ones that he calls to sanctity, the beggars and the dunces and the failures, the prisoners, the criminals, so many that he calls to sanctity and brings to conversion that should bring us great hope, especially those of you who are dunces, We can all have reason for hope because of the great work that God has done in so many souls. One more dimension that I would like to offer to your ongoing meditation, something that has really seized my own heart in the past months, to meditate on the hidden life at Nazareth. I offered you that quote from St. Louis de Montfort that Jesus gave more glory to God his Father by being obedient to his mother for 30 years in Nazareth than he would have given him if he had converted the whole world by the greatest miracles. That's staggering. Because who evaluates anything that way? We measure so many things. Even those of us who are growing in holiness, are trying to grow in holiness anyway, measure things by, if I converted a lot of people, if I did miracles, if I, did these spectacular things, if I would only preach these great homilies and everybody would be converted. But Jesus, living a hidden life in Nazareth for 30 years, gave more glory to his Father than if he had converted the whole world by the greatest miracles. How staggering. The hidden life. And to take into your prayer what it was like in that house in Nazareth. You had there the Immaculate Conception and the Incarnate Word. And St. Joseph. Father Benedict Rochelle likes to make a little joke that he would hate to be St. Joseph. That poor guy was the only one who was conceived with sin in that house. Everybody knew who was the cause of any problem that came up. St. Joseph really was, the theologians seem to be in agreement about this, sanctified by his, at least by his wedding proposal to Our Lady. He gave his fiat to her. There are many stories, many backgrounds, but I think the tradition is narrowing in more and more that St. Joseph was not an old man with previous children from another marriage, a man who was, you know, sterile and had no interest in Our Lady or something like that, but a young man, virile and yet very much in love with the Lord, a young man that maybe had made his own sort of internal vow of virginity, a commitment that he was going to serve the Lord at whatever cost, was going to serve the Lord totally, and who was as sort of surprised as Our Lady was to be brought into this marriage, and maybe was as nervous to tell Our Lady as she was to tell him that he had made this commitment to the Lord and wasn't planning on having any marital relations. It would be a rather unusual marriage in that way, and Our Lady with her own nervousness. But St. Joseph, a young man with a great intensity and a great passion, not at all stilted in his passion, but rather very much in love and able to see the beauty of Our Lady, perhaps as no one else ever was able to see the beauty of Our Lady. St. Joseph could see that, and his heart moved to protect her, moved to be with her, moved to love her, to affirm her, to be attentive to her, to care for her, to provide for her, was moved to use all of the power that he had to make sure that nothing happened to her. A beautiful love, to meditate on that. But Nazareth, what an amazing place. What was happening in that house? I mean, what kind of dinner conversations did they have in that place? The Incarnate Word and the Immaculate Conception and the one entrusted as head over both of them, St. Joseph. And yet we see a dimension of St. Joseph's virtue in that. Because surely they were talking about some sublime things and sharing in the most absolutely vulnerable and absolutely selfless love that has ever existed on this earth was happening in that house in Nazareth, and yet no one ever heard about it. That's St. Joseph. Because when Jesus emerged to preach, he emerged and began his public ministry, and his neighbors said to him, "Who is this? Where did he get all this from?" They were absolutely baffled. So apparently St. Joseph never went to work in the morning and said, "Well, you should have heard the stuff I was hearing last night. It was amazing. Like, Jesus was saying this, Mary was doing this, she received that they were talking about, they gave this exegesis of scripture I'd never heard. It was amazing." St. Joseph, like Our Lady, was able to treasure all of these things in his heart, this totally hidden life. No one ever saw. And this is why St. Joseph, one of his titles is Terror of Demons, because of his tremendous humility. He was able to keep all of this hidden. He never brought attention to himself. He never had to build himself up. He never postured and presented all of this to his friends. He was never flaunting any of this. Tremendous humility, tremendous hiddenness. And it was in this way that the demons, even the demons, didn't know what was happening in the house at Nazareth. They could never get into that place. And not because they weren't interested. The demons wanted to get in there more than anywhere else, because that was the source of their undoing at work. But St. Joseph was terror of demons because of his tremendous humility. They could never enter into that place. And we see this again in St. Joseph in the way that he protects them. We have two different images of the same mystery, one in the book of Revelations and one in the Gospel of Matthew. In both cases, there is a scene where the child is threatened and the mother is threatened to be killed by the demon. In the Gospel of Matthew, it is the slaughter of the innocents by Herod. In the book of Revelation, it is the great sign that appeared in the sky, and the dragon goes after the woman who just bore a male child. In the book of Revelation, we see the normal image of battle that we are used to. Saint Michael, the archangel, takes up sword and shield, leads the heavenly host, vanquishes the dragon, and they disappear into the earth. But in Matthew, in the Gospel of St. Matthew, in the slaughter of the innocents, we see a different image. In this case, it's not St. Michael, but it's St. Joseph. And he doesn't take up sword and shield. He takes up actually the same weapons, but they are obedience and humility. And he takes the mother and child, obedient to the dream he received. And he doesn't form an army and wage war on Herod, start a political revolt, advertise it in the newspapers, and take on an internet blog stream in order to crush all of the enemies. He just disappears into the obscurity of Egypt. Takes Mary and Jesus, and they disappear from sight. And he remains there, waiting, faithful, patient, not irritated, not clamoring, not forcing his own will, not fighting to do his own thing, but waiting, trusting that the Father, whom he has been called to represent on earth, will instruct him when the next move is to be made. And so they disappear in Egypt. What he does on earth is done in heaven by Saint Michael with sword and shield. And what we are called to, the kind of humility and obedience that St. Joseph has, and humility and obedience that are willing to just disappear, that don't need to draw lots of attention to ourselves, that doesn't need to flaunt all of our gifts and our strength and our whatever. None of us has the kind of riches that St. Joseph had. None of us could speak of the kinds of things that he could speak of. And yet he was more silent than all the rest. Are we able to enter into that humility of silence, that obedience to God's command, to move when it is time to move, to stay when it is time to stay, to return when it is time to return, to listen at all times for the instructions that God leads us, that God gives us to lead us how to love Jesus and Mary. Magnificent things happened in that house in Nazareth in this completely understated way. We might think, well, maybe he stayed in Nazareth for 30 years because they really wanted to convert the neighbors. Well, apparently that didn't work out. So probably that wasn't it. Well, maybe it was because Jesus and Joseph were meant to make these great works of art that would be a model for all other works of art. Well, apparently that didn't work out either. We have no remnants of their carpentry, of their handiwork. No relics left of the houses that they built or the cabinetry that they made or the stonework, whatever it is. There are different theories about exactly in what way they were tectons, that they were carpenters. It wasn't for that. Maybe it was the great sonatas that they would compose. Maybe it was the great songs that they would sing. Maybe it was none of those things. 30 years in Nazareth, leading this completely ordinary life, but totally in union with God. This is the way of sanctity for each one of us. Most of our life is not spent, even those of us who are called to do some extraordinary things, even those of us who will be called to be a little bit more in the limelight or be a little bit more broadly recognized, even those of us that are called to that, it will be a very small percentage of our life that's spent doing that, that's spent composing the great musical work or the great book or the great work of art. It will be a very small part of our life that is spent doing some extraordinary thing. The majority of our life is the same way of sanctity that Saint Joseph lived with Jesus and Mary in Nazareth. They are the example for us. They are the inspiration for us. And they are the source of grace for us to live each of those in-between moments, each of those simple moments, that we can eat our meals. That's relevant, coming up soon. That we can eat our meals as they ate their meals, in union with God. That we can carry out our tasks, our studies, that we can say our prayers as they said their prayers and carried out their work, in union with God. Simply that. There was one little saint who discovered the secret of this. Well, not yet a saint as such yet, a blessed Charles de Foucauld. He was grew up Catholic, lost his faith, became an atheist, but asked God if he exists to reveal himself. And he was captivated by Nazareth. As he read the gospel, he had an inspiration and realized that Jesus had truly taken the lowest place and no one could take it from him when he entered into Nazareth. Jesus, who had come from the hidden place in the bosom of the Father, entered into the hidden place in the house of Saint Joseph in the presence of Our Lady in Nazareth. And it would be for each one of us, and Blessed Charles de Foucauld saw that very clearly for him, it would be by being drawn first into Nazareth, into that hidden place, that simple place, that really unremarkable place, that place that the world never sees and the demons never get to because it is so silent and so hidden, so humble. By being drawn there, that he would then be drawn with Jesus back to the hidden place, the bosom, the embrace of the Father, which is the destiny that all of our hearts long for, to be in that eternal embrace of the Father that Jesus has been in, that Jesus came forth to bring us back to. He came forth into Nazareth, and he has to bring us back through Nazareth, back into that hidden embrace of the Father. Blessed Charles de Foucauld followed that call into the Sahara Desert and wanted always to form a community there, to live in community. But there are, in the place that he went to, basically only Muslims who were rather suspicious of all of his Christian ways. But then he became friend to the Muslims. He welcomed them in. It was known as a house of charity, a house of hospitality, the house that he had in the Sahara Desert. And he tried to share with them, first of all, through simple charity, sharing, breaking his bread, sharing service with them, looking for ways to take them in, to take care of them, to meet them in simple acts of charity. He longed to have a community of Christians that he could pray with, Catholics that he could celebrate the Eucharist with. He finally had one who came to follow him, and that one converted to Islam and tried to kill him. It didn't work out. He ended up dying in relative obscurity. No one ever came to follow his rule of life. No one ever came to live with him. He lived this very obscure life of deep love, union with Jesus, but not fruitful in any of the ways that the world would measure success. Certainly not fruitful in the ways that Mother Teresa had success. Mother Teresa died after 50 years after founding her order, and she had 5,000 nuns in 100 houses in 70 different countries. Blessed Charles de Foucauld had one follower who became Muslim and tried to kill him. Not the same. And yet, as he so often meditated himself, unless a grain of wheat fall to the ground, if it only falls to the ground, it will remain alone. But if it falls to the ground and dies, it will become a great harvest. It will bear much fruit. And Blessed Charles de Foucauld, welcoming others in as he always did, there came by a group of marauding criminals who started slaughtering some of those in the village, came into encounter with him, didn't know what to do with him, became very scared, took him prisoner, and then one of them, in a fit of rage, ended up killing him as well. The grain of wheat fell to the ground and died. And then, after his death, one religious community after another started sprouting up to follow his rule, a simple rule of humility, a rule of hospitality, a rule of living out Nazareth, simply living in the way of Saint Joseph, humbly with Jesus and Mary, living a way of love. Not a remarkable life, but in fact the most remarkable life, because it's lived in charity, in total union with God. So all of the little sisters of Jesus, the little sisters of the poor, the little brothers of Jesus, there are about 7 or 8 religious orders that are dedicated to Blessed Charles de Foucauld. He founded in his death more religious orders than he could have founded in his life. It is the way that the grain of wheat, not very significant, falls to the ground and dies, and then bears much fruit. As we take a few minutes of prayer with the Blessed Sacrament, pray the Litany of Saints, and then receive the blessing of Jesus and benediction. Let us make an offering of ourselves, that we too may be a grain of wheat offered, not significant in itself, not any more significant than the very simple life lived in Nazareth, but given to Jesus as the life of Joseph and Mary were. It bears tremendous fruit, fruit that we may never come to see in our own lifetime, but fruit that redounds to everlasting life, that lasts much longer than all of our projects and our books and our successes and our manuscripts and everything else. It lasts into eternity.